Okay. So our paper is on the challenge of meeting the cares of women of color enrolling in HIV care, and we're looking at specifically barriers to care and how they change over time. I'd like to acknowledge Jeff Birnbaum, who is the PI on this, and our two study coordinators, Rachel Peters and Jennifer Lee, also the Albert Einstein College of Medicine for the Evaluation Center, and Nico Verdicius, project manager who hustled to get me a complete final data set a couple of weeks ago. So these are hot off the presses. No relationships to disclose in this context. Okay, so we're part of a SPINS initiative to enhance and retain women in HIV care. There were originally 11 sites, 10 sites participated. There's 6 urban and 4 rural. Brooklyn is one of those. I'm going to be talking about the local Brooklyn data today. Okay, this slide shows where our sites are, and there are 4 sites in Brooklyn. They're all in the epicenter of the HIV epidemic. They have among the highest incidence and prevalence rates in New York City. They have the absolute highest number of women living with HIV in any borough in New York City. So we're hitting an important target population. The HEAT program is the Health Education and Alternatives for Teens. It's an adolescent program. Brooklyn Hospital Center treats populations with HIV. Interfaith Medical Center, for those of you who follow the news, is about to close any day now, but they're still taking care of women of color with HIV. And then Housing Works is a community-based organization treating people with HIV. Okay, so what we did in our particular intervention is we added a peer outreach worker component to an existing case management program that linked women of color to HIV care. And we, for this study, were limited to looking just at women. Peers are women who are HIV positive, who are hired as part of the clinical team. And one of the challenges in the first year, as you might imagine, is bringing those women who had formerly been patients now into part of a care team and becoming professionals. And we've actually had a couple of peers come up and out and are now professionals, since so we feel like we've done a good job in changing people's lives. Okay, so the peers go out and they conduct outreach in person and by phone. They do lots of home visits, and they also are the people who collect the data collection interviews for our surveys. All right, in the long run, we expect that there will be an increased proportion of women who are in consistent HIV medical care for at least 18 months, improved or stable clinical indicators, improved self-assessed health through the Centers for Disease Control Health-Related Quality of Life 14, and reduced barriers to care. Okay, this is the latest CDC slide that shows the population of women in the United States on the right, and diagnosis of HIV infection on the left, and we see that women are disproportionately affected by HIV. Okay, so methods for this study. This was a prospective study relying on a convenient sample of women who were reachable. So if you look at CDC data or also New York City data, what you find is there are somewhere between 19 and 21% of people who don't know their HIV status. So we found women who we could contact and cajole and bring into care. So we started enrolling women in November 2010, and we completed baseline enrollment at the end of July in 2013. And they had to meet the study criterion of not receiving medical HIV medical care. And in Brooklyn, we included a 6th category, which are women who were assessed at risk of dropping out of care because they had missed appointments, they had adherence problems, substance abuse, all sorts of issues. We drew those from the literature. Be happy to talk about those at another time. So we had a continuum of people who were newly diagnosed, not in care, but the criterion was that they weren't currently in care. Okay, so today, happily, this is a teaser presentation, because we have some preliminary data now on the first year of information. So we have information on care status, demographic characteristics, self-assessed health, and then barriers to care, which were 30 items that were developed for this study. They were developed by the Seitz and by Einstein, and we recoded these items into the barriers present or the barriers absent. I'm going to get the barriers in a minute. And then we recoded them into clusters of personal, provider, and structural barriers, and those definitions will come back in a minute. So what we did is we actually enrolled 196 women in HIV care during the study period, but what we wanted to do for this study is to look at a cohort of women who came in at baseline and have also been seen at 12 months. So there are a number of women who have already dropped out further analysis. We also have a number of women who are not yet eligible for a 12-month survey. So these are the ones that we have as of about October 1st. So you can see that we didn't bring in that many new women with HIV, and it's a little bit worrisome to us because we know that there are a lot more women out there who have HIV who are not diagnosed or who have never been in care. We also have a high proportion in our cohort who are at risk of dropping out because of high risks. Okay, so the CDC health-related quality of life. For this analysis, I'm just using the one global question which asks about your general health. And we see on the left what women said at baseline and what they said at year follow-up. Nobody had access to what they said before, so these are independent of each other. And at 12 months, women said that there were a higher proportion of women who said that they were in better health, were relieved. These are the age groups. There are a quarter of our population, or our sample rather, who are under 25. So in New York, that means they're eligible for adolescent care. Also of concern to us is that there are 20% of these women are 50 or older. And I actually have someone doing a thesis with me now who's looking at this older population. And since the median age of death for women from HIV-related disease in New York City is age 50, we need to be paying attention to older women. I mean, we tend to focus on younger women because they're more sexually active, but there's a whole cohort out there of women that we need to start taking a look at. Okay, this is a women of color study. Most women who live in central Brooklyn are women of color. Most were of African descent, and I say African descent rather than African American because we have a lot of Afro-Caribbeans and also African immigrants in Brooklyn. The Latinas are actually a mix of Latina and African descent. Okay, most women are single. Of interest is that 15% were homeless and another 6% were living not at home. And so they're doubled up with someone. And a lot of times that's because they're coming out of treatment, they're coming out of jail. There's a lot of fluidity of housing and unstable housing, and it's something we'll be taking a closer look at in further analyses. Up there. Okay, health insurance. One thing that's interesting about the Brooklyn cohort is that most women come in with some kind of public insurance. And I'm actually presenting a data on Wednesday, and there's a much higher proportion across the U.S. who do not have public insurance. So women are able in Brooklyn to access the tools needed to get medical care. Whether they use it or not is another thing, but they're able to get Medicaid and other associated public sources of assistance. Most women are not working. Many women are not looking for work, but most women, two-thirds, receive public assistance. So, and public assistance is both for income support and housing support. All right, so looking at barriers to care, and these are the barriers recorded at baseline and at 1 year follow-up. There were 13 barriers that we considered to be personal barriers, so a person could have a range of between 0 and 13 barriers. Provider barriers, I feel uncomfortable, I feel like I'm being judged. Those are the kinds of things that go into provider barriers. And then system barriers, things like I don't have transportation, and other factors, and I'm going to get back to some of these in a moment. So overall, when women came in, they reported on average 13 barriers. So there were lots of things that were getting in the way of them getting HIV care to begin with. At a year later, they're reporting on average 9 barriers, and where there's really the biggest difference that I'll talk about is in the provider barriers and the kind of qualitative difference. So we were, when I actually wrote this this abstract in February, we found that barriers hadn't changed, and since then the findings have changed because we have a larger sample, and we were actually relieved to find that there were fewer barriers reported at 1 year, so something's going well. Okay, so these are 5 of the 30 barriers at baseline and comparing them a year later. I need more information if I'm going to come into care. Felt like I should learn to live with it. Get back a track on your own. Fatalism. Thought you might be judged. Felt embarrassed. Learning to live with it, getting back on track on your own are personal barriers. The others are provider barriers. So there's something that's going on with providers that are making women uncomfortable. In addition, a third of all the barriers reported as being present by these women. So you can see between baseline and 12 months, for these top 5 occurring barriers, there were some big shifts. So this is just a simple reduction in barriers between baseline and 12 months. And again, the peers who were doing these surveys didn't have access to the baseline data, so there was no response bias here. So the biggest change was somebody's doing something right in the providers, because fewer women felt like they needed more information about HIV care. They felt that their information would not be kept private. They had some trust now that their information would be kept private. Uncertainty about housing or finances, which didn't appear in the top 5, but because there's a lot of fluidity of housing circumstances, a lot of that is due to the work of the case managers who are able to get women housing benefits and put things into place to make things more stable. And I'm one of those people who say, if you don't have stable housing, you're not going to get treatment because there are too many competing survival needs. Women were less fearful that HIV care would bring unwanted change, and they reduced their level of fatalism of just learning to live with it. They were coming to medical care. Okay, so conclusions in this teaser of a report. Women report a significant number of barriers on enrollment, especially related to fears about providers. They report significant improvement in self-care over a 12-month period of time. I'm sorry, self-assessed health. And women report significant reduction in barriers over 12 months, mostly related to concern about providers. And this kind of gets back to what you were saying, Lori, about navigators and people helping folks get into HIV care. And our next steps are going to be building multivariate models to look at engagement over time. And we're also, so we're going to be comparing women who stayed in care to women who dropped out, and we're going to be looking at self-assessed health barriers and a lot of the other data that weren't presented in this presentation, which has to do with medical conditions, domestic violence, and other issues. So that's it.